Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. This is podcast 357, back at home, sitting in the living room right off the kitchen here at the broadcast bunker, because all of my wires and my mixer and all of the equipment is laying on the floor downstairs in the bunker. So we're going kind of remote up here in the living room at the bunker for this podcast 357, The New Talk. I'm going to talk about the breakout from Wyoming and some final thoughts about the trip as well, and maybe a little bit of political updates in this podcast 357, of course, sponsored by Bockland R&D. You know, you've heard me talk a lot about manufacturing on the Bob Davis Podcasts. I have a lot of manufacturing clients and people associated with manufacturing, and I'm fascinated with it because of applied technologies in it. So let's talk about manufacturing and Bockland R&D, which is a company that can teach people really how to use some of those applied technologies. But aside from that, they're still a great manufacturer, and there's been lots of developments at Bockland so far in the new year. So if you're in the manufacturing business or are interested in what Bockland does, listen up, because there's an updated all-new Bockland.com, and that can show you what they can do for you, and they can it can show you and explain to you what Bockland does in the manufacturing business. Also, check out the links to Tara Bockland's Healthy Life blog. Why? Well, we've talked about values as well in relation to Bockland, and living healthy for all of Bockland's employees is central to the values of the company, and we've discussed that in some other podcasts as well. But they do really innovative things. The website is robust. There's lots of videos and links. John just did a webinar on March 31st about how to monetize 3D printing for production planning and tooling and other stuff. So if you're interested in manufacturing, it's a great website. But the bottom line with Bockland is to remember these things. First of all, wicked fast turnaround times if you're a client of Bockland R&D. Innovative solutions, which I've talked about. Real client service, and I've told stories about that. As well as real resources about Bockland at Bockland.com. Here's what you do. Aside from going to Bockland.com and finding out what they do, contact Joe Dorn or Andy Bleck at Bockland.com and ask what they can do for you. Find out what energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imagination can do for your company today at Bockland.com. BAKLUND.com, Bockland.com. And thanks, John, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. I can't wait to get back on the phone here and get together in the near future, because we always have great conversations about technology and manufacturing and business. Looking forward to that. So, yeah, back at home, what a breakout from Wyoming. If you listen to the last podcast, it was just at the end of the truck stop delay. That was Friday night. And in podcast time. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be stuck here, I'm just going to start doing podcasts. I had Friday night was kind of a night off. And I was going to do no podcast on Friday, no podcast on Saturday, and just drive. That was the plan. And so I get to this, you know, I told the story in that podcast of getting on I-80 and finding out it was closed. And it was closed due to this giant pileup. And it had been closed for quite a while, and I didn't know that. Aside from the fact that I took this massive detour to get to Sinclair, Wyoming, I get to the Sinclair, literally truck stop in Sinclair, and pull in there and find out that I-80 is closed. Actually, I went past the truck stop and then had to turn around because I-80 was closed. So I get back and I'm like, why have they closed it? Blah, 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 blah. And they were saying, well, they're still cleaning up from this massive truck pileup that occurred just ahead of here going up Elk Mountain on I-80. And the impression that I was given through these conversations with people at the truck stop was that Laramie and Elk Mountain were essentially the high points on the road to Cheyenne. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to go. I certainly did some research, looked at the webcams of the highway going up to Elk Mountain, and looked at the temperature, checked the weather and everything else. But the thing that was the primary motivating factor was I go into the truck stop and the guy goes, there's another snowstorm coming, which means you're going to get stuck here again if you stay. So I was like, okay, I'm going to risk it. And I decided to go. Well, you know, actually, it was okay. I got up Elk Mountain and to Laramie with no real issues at all. There was a little bit of ice, but nothing serious. Got down there, And I was exhausted at this point because I'd done the podcast. It was all the waiting and I was tired to begin with. So I pull in and I thought, well, I'm just going to take a nap. And, you know, I've been going back and forth with leaving the diesel running and sleeping because you can do that. The ambulance has exhaust fans and heat back there and everything else. It's just weird to be laying on, you know, on the floor. You know, I've got a little bed and everything, which I've described, but laying on the floor of the ambulance and sleeping with the diesel running, it's just weird. It feels like the thing's going to start moving. I have this weird idea that I'm going to wake up and somebody's going to be driving it or something. So it was hard to sleep, but I did finally fall asleep. And this was, I got up there about 1 o'clock. I think I slept for a couple of hours. And when I woke up, a couple of times I woke up and I had parked in front of a white truck. So I'd looked out the window and seen this white truck a couple times, and I really didn't think anything of it. So when I finally woke up, I sat up and looked out the back of the mobile podcast command unit, and it was a whiteout. It wasn't the white truck I was looking at. It was literally a whiteout. And I thought, oh, God, I don't want to get stuck here at this truck stop. So I jumped up, ran into the truck stop, went to the bathroom, came out. And when I came out, it was 5 o'clock in the morning. When I came out, all these trucks were leaving. And I was like, if they're leaving, I'm leaving this time, because I learned the lesson. Pay attention. And I was really mad at myself, because if I'd have just kept going, I would have missed it all. But, you know, I was tired and I thought, well, I'm going to sleep. So they were all leaving and I thought, well, I'm leaving too. By now, you know, there's 2 or 3 inches of snow on the ground. It's that heavy, wet snow. It's a spring storm in Wyoming. And so they were hightailing it out of there. And so I was like, I'm going too. So I got in the ambulance. I think I went in the back and crawled through the little doorway and, you know, scooched down in the seat, threw the thing into drive, and, you know, took off with fastening my seatbelt as I went, because there was not a moment to lose. It was a scramble for the highway. And I thought, I'm going to die. But the only saving grace at this point was I figured, well, we're going down the mountain. I figured we're coming down out of the higher altitudes and it'll turn to rain when we get down there. Well, I left following the trucks, and I'm praying it's not as bad as it looks, but it was bad. We started down I-80, or I should say up I-80 at about 20 miles an hour. We started climbing. The only thing, thank God I'm from the north, because if I was from any other part of the country, I would have been terrified, because, I mean, I've certainly driven on a lot of icy roads in Minnesota in winter, but we started down at Sinclair, Wyoming, down, notice I say, at 6,500 feet. So the ride up the mountain would be going higher than 6,500. And so we're going up into this weather. And as soon as I got behind the trucks and started heading out, remember, I'm going 80 east. And if you're a trucker or if you go that way a lot, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Clearly, the ride up the mountain was not over. I would love to have recorded this, but I couldn't move. And I just said to myself, if I stop, in fact, I was driving along and there was a car that foundered and got stuck right in front of us. And I was behind a truck and I thought, if I stop, I'll never get going again. So I just have to keep going. So we were going up this mountain, keep in mind, up at 15 miles an hour, all trucks. Nobody was even passing the trucks. And so as we're going up, you know, we're going through these hairpin curves and turns all the way up. And, you know, they had plowed it and they were still trying to plow it. So the plows were coming through, thank God. But here's the thing, Mobile Podcast Command did great. I was getting up there, and as we got up, and I would imagine it was probably 8,000 or 9,000 feet, we started to go down. And that's when I started to get really worried, because I was like, this thing is so heavy. If I start going too fast, I don't know how I'm going to stop. But it was good. Line of trucks with me in the middle, heavy snow and ice. You know, when I asked the guy back at the Sinclair truck stop, you know, how bad it was, one of the guys said, listen, as long as some damn fool doesn't come down there at 70 miles an hour and just jackknife into everybody else, it'll be just fine. So just go slow. What happened with the traffic jam, as far as I know, is that a truck jackknifed and caused this big pileup in the previous storm. And so one of the things that I saw heading up in this sort of loam of morning in the whiteness that was this whiteout heading up driving behind this truck was I looked over and I saw that jackknife trailer, which had caused the big pileup a couple days before. And honestly, it looked like a plane wreck. It was, there's no way that whoever was in that made it out alive. So it was pretty hairy. And of course, I made it to Cheyenne. And as soon as I got to Cheyenne, I just kept going, you know, because I was like, I'm going to outrun this storm. I'm not taking a break. I'm just going. And I kept going. I called it the breakout from Wyoming. And I didn't even stop for bathroom breaks until I got to Nebraska. I just kept going. I think I finally stopped in Sydney, Nebraska, and I chilled out there for a while. And then the next day, just drove all day through Nebraska. And it was finally outran the storm. How many times have I driven through Nebraska? It was pouring rain the whole time. This is about the third time I've driven through Nebraska, and it was just pouring down rain. But I was very happy that it was just straight, flat highway. And I love that. Then finally, the next day, just drove all the way to Iowa. And the plan was just to keep driving home. But at 2 o'clock in the morning, it was warm in Iowa. I mean, it's so weird that up here in Minnesota, it's been like, today was 44. And bitter, raw, cold wind. And I couldn't believe that it was so cold up here because it was really nice in Iowa. I guess west of Des Moines, it was really warm. Finally, I was still pretty far west of Des Moines at 2 o'clock in the morning, and there was so much thick fog because of the warm temperatures and heavy rain that I finally pulled into an old rest stop that they'd gotten rid of, and they just allow trucks to park there. So there was a lot of trucks there, and it was absolutely pitch black and warm, so I didn't have to run the diesel, keep the heat on, and I ended up sleeping for about 6 hours. Got up, made myself some coffee, and headed out and headed back at a more leisurely place. The only place I visited on the way back was Dexter, Iowa, which was where the shootout between Bonnie and Clyde and Buck Barrow and Blanche Barrow occurred in 1932 or 3. And it was a weird, creepy little town. I didn't have to say that. And it just, I could go on and on about what Bonnie and Clyde, what were they doing up there? But I mean, it's still absolutely rural. It's about 3 miles off of 80. And it's just a typical farm town from the night. It still looks like it probably looks almost similar, if not exactly similar to what it looked like in 1933. And there's a little museum there. Now I'm talking like a Southerner. And I drove around there for a little while and looked at everything and took a picture and then headed back. So a lot happened on the trip, and there's a lot to talk about. And I'll be talking about some of, as I kind of integrate the trip, and I'm really tired right now, but as I integrate the trip, I'll be talking about some of this stuff on April 25th at Chanhassen at the SD48 Republican Shindig out there. And of course, the Mobile Podcast Command Unit will be there with me. And as I said, as time goes on, I'm remembering things and points that I want to make. You know, the general manager of the Bob Davis podcasts, my mom, always asks me if anyone comments on a particular podcast. She has apparently not realized that she can read comments right on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. You just click on comments. Although she will now, and I'm going to hear about my condescending attitude. But one of the cool things that happened on the trip was that night in Elko, Nevada, when I finally managed to post a podcast. I was exhausted, and I decided to shut it down for a while, so I pulled in behind the casino there. And I was getting all the sleeping stuff out. The diesel was idling, and there was a knock on the window, and it freaked me out. I was freaked. And I turned around and I opened the little screen window there, and there was a guy out there. And I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen now. And he was like, hey, what's up with the podcast? And, you know, I forget sometimes, and I had forgotten that I'm driving around in an ambulance with my name and URL written on it, right? So I explained it to him and said, just go to the site and check it out and see what you think. And I didn't think anything of it. Well, the guy that knocked on my window sent me an email, and I'm going to read it because I thought it was great. And this is This is why, one of the reasons I made the trip. This is from Dylan, and he says, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me, but I knocked on the window of your mobile podcast command center in Elko in the parking lot of the Red Lion at about midnight last Wednesday. Just wanted to let you know that this is the most diverse and appealing podcast I have ever heard. I have some friends as well as professors that I know would love it, and I plan on sharing it with them. I'm a history buff, and I've been to the Donner Party Museum at Donner Lake, as well as studied this in school, and nonetheless, I learned a lot from your podcast even on that. Boy, I hope I was right. Whether or not one knows the subject well, or think they do so far, your podcast proved to be a wealth of great new information, and I appreciate that because you and I probably share, Dylan, a passion for the Donner Party story because it's just truly amazing. He said he thought it was great that the podcast cover a whole range of topics, all of which I'm interested in, and I like your worldview as well. Keep up the good work, and I wish you luck in your travels, and I guess I needed it because of coming down that mountain in the snow. Thank you, Dylan. Cool thing about the mobile unit is I see people driving by, looking at it, and then I see their phones come out, and I see them looking it up on their smartphones, which is another thing about technology today and how much it can amplify whatever you're doing personally. It's an amazing thing. As for news coverage, well, we need a better setting to talk about the news. Through the magic of on-demand audio, I think we should change venues from the living room here to one of my favorite places in the world. This is the Nepenthe Restaurant at Big Sur, overlooking the march of mountains to the sea to the north, up from Big Sur, up the Pacific Coast Highway, in the brilliant warm California sunshine on a beautiful Saturday. It is a better place to talk about news and politics than the windswept, still cold Minnesota. So I put my name in for a table here at the Nepenthe, and I'm just going to set the stage for you. It's beautiful sun, the green on the sides of the mountains heading down to the sea, one mountain after another into infinity, the beautiful blue of the Pacific, beautiful blue sky. It's about 80 degrees, dry air. It's fabulous. And if you ever go up the PCH, you have to stop at the Nepenthe because it's just about the best place in the world. So, while I'm waiting for a table, I'll just share some thoughts about what's going on in the news, because I'm still scanning the news. But I'm not seeing anything that really has any traction for me right now. I guess my mind is still out on the road watching America roll by, and I can't for the life of me imagine that people in the towns and cities and places that I passed would be interested in the cattle call of both Republican and eventually Democrat candidates, not because there's anything wrong with any of them, but because it's too early in the process and there are too many of them. And I guess the best way to describe this is just to say, you know, we all know the metaphor of letting the crops lay fallow, where the farmer doesn't plant crops because we need to get the nutrients back in the soil. This is a standard metaphor for people who do creative work, because sometimes you can literally beat your head against the wall and your work is not very good because you're forcing the process. And this is why people get writer's block, and it's why people burn out, because they're not letting the crops lay fallow. You need to rest. And the problem with continuous coverage of politics, we just finished an election in November. So we did the election in November. We went through 2.5 to 3 months of analysis of the election in November. And now we're now running headlong into the big election cycle, which is the presidential election cycle, as well as a congressional cycle. And it's 2015. I mean, we aren't even into 2016. And the reason is that these candidates are all running around. And what they're doing is they're running for delegates. So they're trying to appeal to the political actives, the people that they're not appealing to voters, and the media keeps calling them voters, but they're not voters. They're appealing to people who are politically active in all of these states, particularly in the first primary states, Iowa and New Hampshire. Although you're going to start to see them campaign in Florida, and you're going to start to see them campaigning in other states where they have early primaries: Texas, Florida, New Hampshire, of course, Iowa, and perhaps Minnesota. at this point, because Minnesota moved its primary up to right after the Iowa primary. I think we're the second primary in the 2016 race. But we're not letting the body politic, so to speak, we're not letting the body politic lay fallow. And as a result, it just seems like a rehash of previous campaigns, because we're not letting people rest from all of this politically driven reporting. And I think that the issues and emotion-driven political reporting, you know, today's outrage, who said what today? Oh, did you hear what this one said? Did you hear what that one said? Is one of the things that prevents us from coming together as a country. Politics is being covered like sports, but politics is not sports. It's far more serious. And when you're just beating it into people's heads day in and day out, I think they just turn it off. I mean, I mentioned, you know, on the trip that really the media is a valve. And you can open up the valve to the point where it's a fire hose, you know, or you can turn it off. I mean, we have that capability. I'm just not so sure that these days that people fully understand that it is a valve. You can turn it off because everywhere you go, it's Fox News and CNN and everything else. And honestly, I've reached the point where I don't even want to go into a restaurant that has televisions because of that, because I don't want to hear while I'm eating my dinner, I am not interested in what's going on with CNN or what's going on with the Wild Game or anything else. If I want to know that, I'll check my phone. I don't need that. Now, it's notable that here at the Nepenthe, there is no television, and there's just a little bit of music. And as I walk out here in front of the restaurant, it's very quiet. And all you really hear are the people talking and enjoying themselves and not being distracted constantly by televisions. And that's kind of, in some ways, a metaphor for what's going on in our country. Like I said, I just can't imagine that this is something that's really interesting to people right now unless they're super politically involved. So just from an analysis point, they're not telling you that these are politically involved people. So the impression is the American people think this or the American people think that. And as I drive through these towns and see these people playing softball or taking their kids to the park or having breakfast on Sunday morning or whatever, I don't think they're thinking about this stuff. You know, I like to sit and listen to conversations with people, and they're talking about family. They're talking about friends. They're talking about their jobs. They're not sitting there talking about politics over and over and over again the way some people who are constantly involved in this are. And I think it's dangerous for the country media-wise to continue just churning and chumming this stuff to the point where we've got it cut down into such a fine grain. We're not allowing new ideas to take hold. We're not listening to people. And we're not giving people time to take it in and come to their own conclusions. They're going to do that anyway. You know, they're going to do it whether the media lets them do that or not. But we're going to miss it, I guess, is what I'm saying, in this process of trying to cover every little, you know, heartbeat. To that end, Politico and CNN are hiring 40 more reporters, as are all the news agencies. So you're going to have an army of young reporters out this summer trying to find stories where none exist, and you're going to get a lot of exposés, you're going to get a lot of he said, she said, you're going to get a lot of daily outrage, and I don't know that it's positive. You know, I don't think there's any way to stop it, you know, but I'm tell you what I'm going to do. What I've come to the conclusion of, first of all, I'm not interested, to tell you the truth, in the day-to-day back and forth between Rand Paul and the other Republicans or Ted Cruz or, you know, Scott Walker this and Chris Christie that and Jeb Bush and the infighting. I don't think it's healthy for the Republicans, but I don't have a problem with these candidates. I haven't formed any opinions about these candidates at this point. I've kind of disconnected from that, and I think there's a reason for it. And the reason for it is I don't want to form an opinion about Rand Paul right now because he may or may not be in the race. I'll remind you of, was it 2010? No, it was 2000. Was it 2008? It may have been. Fred, what's his name? Fred Thompson. I'm reminded of Fred Thompson, who looked really like an inevitable candidate in 2008 at this time, all the way up to the state fair in 2008, and then he kind of imploded, and is another year where there were a lot of Republican candidates, and we ended up with John McCain, and everybody knows about that. I think it's dangerous to, well, it's not dangerous, and you can't stop it. It's just frustrating. It can't be stopped. It's frustrating because I think it draws away from the issues. And I guess what I want to say is, despite this army of young reporters out there covering stories, really the trend of political thought remains in four or five areas. And this is what I'm going to do. I want to talk about these four or five areas, at least until there's something really specific to talk about when it comes to presidential candidates. Economics, foreign policy, domestic issues, and social issues. Almost all of the issues that we're going to find out about or hear about in the 2016 period are collapsed somewhere in these main headings. And here's the problem. I still don't see a philosophy from either party that explains how the country is going to deal with, A, the very real problems in these areas, B, how we're going to deal with a very real onslaught of technology growth in the next few years that is going to continue to disrupt. And I'm going to talk a lot about that. I'll be talking a lot about that at the ST48 thing, because I'm convinced that technology is going to play a big role in disruption of government as people continue to adapt and work around things that are a problem for them, whether it's taxation, onerous taxation, or whether it's onerous regulation, things of that nature. People are going to have more and more tools to work around the attempts by government to control what we do. And Americans just don't operate on this frequency of control. You know, it takes different avenues depending on which side of the political spectrum you're talking about. People, depending on where they come from, the things that they're concerned about that represent to them too much government control, you know, one side versus the other, is very interesting. But the point here is that people have a resistance to government control. Even a person who is a big believer in big government as a force to ameliorate all of the problems has certain kinds of problems with surveillance, let's say, or certain kinds of problems with militarization of the police department, things of that nature. So it's a theme in American politics in just one of those areas, which in this case is domestic politics. But there's no overarching conceptualization right now or big idea that will motivate people about economics, foreign policy, domestic issues like immigration and social issues. And I don't really see or hear it with any of these candidates. I hear a lot of platitudes. And as I said, I hear the same things I heard 4 years ago on both sides of the fence. So I'm a little disappointed with the early coverage, and I'm a little disappointed with the whole field at this point and what they're doing and why they're doing what they're doing. The other thing is, and I think it's important to mention this, and I don't mean this in an ominous way. I don't mean it as really a negative comment. This is just my observation. I really don't think that the Obama presidency is going to end well. I think there's too many people that are too inexperienced at the top, and I think that there are too many spinning plates and mistakes that have been made and that are in the process of being made. And the general trend is to make mistakes and then cover them up so that we are sort of not aware of them. They put us to sleep with rhetoric and coverage, and the media does not really cover the Obama presidency the way it did the Bush presidency. But I believe one of these four issues that I talked about is going to become the issue of 2016, very possibly foreign policy or economics. And when it does, many of these candidates that we're hearing from right now will drop away. And I will be talking more about these four or five areas. I think they're really, I think it's a good thing right now to sort of illuminate and talk and think about these things for all of us instead of thinking about individual candidates. There's still too much focus on individual candidates. People say, well, I like Ted Cruz. I like Rand Paul. I like Hillary Clinton. I like Jeb Bush. I like this guy. I like that guy. I like Scott Walker. I like Chris Christie. I like Martin O'Malley. You know, it's not the personality that's important. It's what are the issues and concerns and what is coming up that we're going to have to pay attention to, and what kind of person do we need in the presidency? And how can we get Congress to be more receptive to actually taking action or not taking action and being resolute about it in the future? So I'll talk about all those things. I'm going to be speaking a little bit more, and I will probably be talking about it because I want to get away from the personality stuff. You know, you go out and you speak, and people say, "What do you think about Jeb Bush?" I don't care about Jeb Bush. I don't care about any of these names, because these people, to a certain degree, are vessels on which We, the people, are supposed to project our concerns, and they're supposed to respond to those concerns, and they're supposed to use their brawn and their brains and their intelligence and their capability to figure out how to lead the country in the direction that it needs to go, as well as the direction that we're willing to go. Sometimes we're not willing to go in particular directions, and these guys have to lead. But picking the right guy right now is not the issue. The issue is, what are the issues? And I, like I said, when you look at Drudge and you look at the political reporting, it's very personality focused, because we're very focused on seeing these people on television, and that's dangerous. But the truth is, right now, I would rather sit here in the sun at the Nepenthe and listen to conversations in the distance that people are talking about, and see the beautiful view. And, I think I'll have another coffee and see if my table's ready. Wow, what a view. Just fabulous here. Thanks once again to Bachland R&D for sponsoring Podcast 357. Yeah, I talk a lot about manufacturing, and if you have something to be manufactured, if you are looking for assistance in manufacturing, if you're in the manufacturing business or are interested in what Bachland does, check out the all-new updated Bachland.com. They can show you what they do. And remember, wicked fast turnaround times, innovative solutions, real client service, real resources about Bachland at Bachland.com. And remember to contact Joe Dorn or Andy Bleck at Bachland.com and find out what they can do for you. Find out today what energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imagination can do for your company. Bachland.com, Bachland.com. Thanks once again for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Also want to thank the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast, Mad Case Studio, specializing in quality original automotive artwork. I got to mention that they'll be at a lot of these antique car shows around the metropolitan area here in Minneapolis-St. Paul. This summer, when it starts to actually warm up, if it ever does, they'll be at some of these things, and I'll tell you more about that as we get going. Also, click on the banners there at the top of the page of the BobDavisPodcast.com, and you'll see what kind of work Mad K does. It takes you to their Facebook page, and you can interact with them and find out what they do. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, and thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. Also, Instagram, where I posted some more pictures of the trip. And thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com, securely and safely on the little yellow donate button. Really, really appreciate it, you guys. Thanks for listening, and thanks for listening to Podcast 357. I think my table is ready, so I'm going to go grab my table.